This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We had planned a show about insurance companies and healthcare. We'll get to that another day because there is so much interest in the news from South Carolina yesterday. Part of that is local politics. Can Governor Mark Sanford stay in office after confessing to a year-long affair with a woman in Argentina? Part is national politics. Sanford was the chairman of the Republican Governors Association. He resigned that post yesterday, a rising star in the party, and constantly asked about presidential aspirations. And part of it, for some anyway, is prurience, a prominent public official, a sex scandal, embarrassing emails. But are we sometimes too quick to judge? All of us are human, after all. Why should private behavior threaten the career of a public official? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, former ambassador to Syria Edward Derigian on the difficulties of diplomacy in Damascus. But first, some argue that while adultery may be a matter between Mark Sanford and his wife, the governor needs to resign for breach of duty. That's the opinion of Mary Newsom. She's associate editor for the Charlotte Observer and wrote an editorial in today's paper. She joins us from her office in Charlotte, North Carolina. Nice to have you with us.
Good afternoon, and thank you.
Breach of duty? How so?
Mark Sanford, essentially, from what we know, left his staff and probably his family and much of the state not knowing where he was or how to get in touch with him.
Is that such a problem?
Well, yes, we believe that it is a problem. Among other things, the governor in South Carolina is the only one who has the constitutional authority to call out the National Guard, for instance. Let's say a tornado had hit or a nuclear disaster. They would be pretty much up the creek if they could not reach the governor.
And we did hear from the lieutenant governor that, indeed, he did not know where the governor was and had no way to get in touch with him.
That is very true, and I think that was of great concern. It is worth noting that the governor and the lieutenant governor are not exactly the best of buddies.
And, indeed, the governor and many Republicans in South Carolina are not close.
That is true. Governor Sanford, who has a wonderful reputation nationally as a kind of a guy who stands on principle a lot, has had a very tough time working with the conservative Republicans in South Carolina. He's a loner. He does not play the politics game. And that has hurt him dramatically in his attempts to get any of his proposals through the legislature.
So you think being out of touch for 4, 5, 6 days, that's enough to warrant the resignation of the governor?
I think it is. And I believe that many other people in South Carolina believe the same. Clearly, he's got his supporters. There are some who worry that the lieutenant governor, Andre Bauer, might have his own issues if he were to become governor. But our editorial board just concluded this was above and beyond.
Interestingly, your newspaper is in North Carolina. As far as we can tell, no newspapers in South Carolina have come to this opinion themselves.
That is true. I did a quick check of the editorials of most of the major papers in South Carolina, and I noted, for example, that the state paper, that's what they call it in Columbia, the state paper, in Columbia, had a very strong editorial on Wednesday before his press conference, really excoriating him for just going away and leaving everybody in the lurch. But on Thursday, they kind of peeled back and said they didn't believe it was time to call for his resignation.
And there was a moment of watching that news conference for a lot of people. It was excruciating.
Oh, it was painful to watch, and I think a lot of people's heart went out to him. He was clearly a guy in great pain.
Did he do the right thing, do you think?
I believe he did the right thing in his forthright apology, in coming clean to the extent that he did. I think there are some things that maybe he was skirting around answering. For example, his wife, Jenny Sanford issued a statement yesterday afternoon saying, yes, she had essentially kicked him out of the house 2 weeks ago. But he, when asked were they separated, kind of weaseled about whether they were or not.
You write in the editorial, whatever credibility Governor Sanford, might once have had is shredded. His much-touted principles have unraveled. Isn't saying that he's guilty of breach of duty and ought to resign, isn't that sort of a subterfuge here?
Now, I'm sorry, say that again. Is that a subterfuge?
I wonder if it's a subterfuge and if you aren't saying this man is now scandal-ridden and no longer has the legitimacy of a governor and should resign.
I think that's a piece of it. Any elected official who has to work with others has got to be essentially somebody that they can work with. But by and large, we didn't feel that the sexual affair was enough to call for him to resign. We thought that it was the dereliction of his responsibilities as governor.
Well, thanks very much for being with us today.
Well, thanks very much, Neil.
Mary Newsom, associate editor of the Charlotte Observer, the newspaper in North Carolina, we should note, today wrote an editorial saying that the governor of South Carolina is in breach of his duty for being out of touch with what could have been a critical moment and leaving no one in charge in the state and, should resign as governor of the state of South Carolina. Let's get some listeners on the line. And let's go first to Bill. Bill's calling us from Charleston in South Carolina.
Hello, I love your show, by the way.
Thank you.
I'm calling. In my opinion, what a man does in his personal time shouldn't necessarily affect what he does on the job. I think if we were all put underneath that scrutiny, we would all find ourselves in a big problem. However, where leaving the state and not informing at least some key people as far as what was going on, I think was wrong. Also, any dollars that might have been spent by the state of South Carolina to take this man back and forth to Argentina or wherever he might have been going over the past however long he's been seeing this woman should be also held under scrutiny.
And that's it's under investigation, as I understand. It's not clarified as yet.
Yeah, well, I would hope it's under investigation, and it probably isn't clarified yet. So.
All right. Thanks very much.
All right.
Bye-bye. Let's bring another voice into the conversation. Sophia Nelson is with us. She's editor of politicalintersectionblog.com and a former Republican strategist. She wrote on the Huffington Post today that Governor Sanford should not resign and joins us from her home in Virginia to tell us why. And it's nice to have you back on the program.
Hey, Neil.
And this is, do you address the issue of leaving the state in the lurch and not leaving anybody in charge and being out of touch?
I'm sorry, Neil, I didn't hear you.
There was a question raised by a previous guest of the associate editor of the Charlotte Observer who said he was in breach of his duty. He didn't leave anybody in charge in South Carolina while he was away, didn't leave a forwarding number.
Yeah, I mean, all that's fair, and I also have problems with that. But if you saw my piece in Huffington Post, I was really speaking to the ethical, moral issue of whether or not adultery is something that ought to disqualify folks from public office or further public service once they're exposed to have committed such acts. And it's my opinion, as you read, that it should not. And I think we've watched enough people go up in flames because of perhaps poor judgment in their personal lives, but otherwise good public servants. And so I was making a distinction that, no, like most Americans, I don't approve of what Sanford did. I don't think that he was responsible at all relative to how he left the state, you know, 5 days being out of touch. I assume his chief of staff and some others could get in touch with him and that they may have been complicit, being that they turned over emails that we've all read, you know, in various news medias. And
somebody turned over emails. We don't know who.
Yeah, well, from one statement I saw in one of the, whether it was Politico or otherwise, it said that the state of South Carolina had turned over these emails. So you're right. I mean, I'm assuming somebody officially knew because they turned those over pretty quickly.
The state newspaper had them before this all came to light. They couldn't verify that they were interchanges between the governor. They couldn't find out who this woman was. They couldn't prove it. But they did not know this at the time. Apparently nobody knew where he was.
Well, the interesting thing is that I think we all agree that he was definitely not handling his responsibilities as governor of South Carolina right for the moment, meaning he disappeared, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think my article was specifically addressing the issue of adultery, because that's what you hear all the interest over, as you know, right? Because that's the spicy, hot stuff everybody wants to talk about, the scandal part of this.
And what I was interested in your piece on Huffington Post, Sophia, was let he who is without sin cast the first stone.
That's right. And I have a real issue with that, whether it's Bill Clinton or whether it's you know, in sin, or whether it's former, what was the guy, Livingston, who would have been from Louisiana, Congressman Livingston, who, you know,
Bob Livingston,
was able,
yes,
yeah, to become speaker because of dalliances. I mean, I worked on the Hill with a number of these people, Gingrich, all of them, and they're all really bright men. They all are, again, across party lines, who I think would make great public servants, but they clearly are exercising poor judgment in their personal lives. But, I mean, this sin's as old as I pointed out, David in the Bible. I mean, that's your Old Testament talking there. So, I mean, this has been around for a long time. And the one thing that we know thousands of years later, men are still being consistently reckless when it comes to women and personal choices outside of the bonds of marriage. And not just men, women do it also. But we haven't seen any women be scandalized in this way, ironically, not our women senators, members of Congress, female governors. They just haven't faced these kind of challenges, if you will, with regard to fidelity in their marriage vows.
And, Sophia, what do you make of the hypocrisy argument? Somebody who campaigns on family values endorses these kinds of legislation and, some would say gets into the lives of the bedrooms of other people when he votes against gay rights. And now, well, he's caught.
Well, it's awful, and I agree with that, and I address that also. I mean, I think that if you're going to, you know, but there's my point. Those people who we've seen have their comeuppance, as my grandma would say, they've gotten what they deserve. If you're going to go pointing the finger at somebody else and hold yourself up as some, you know, paragon of virtue, you better live up to it. And the point I'm making is none of us, not me, Neil, not you, not me, can live up to being perfect human beings. It doesn't mean we don't have values and morals and we don't do the best we can. But I personally don't want to get into other people's personal lives because I think it always kind of comes back to bite you when you do that.
Sophia Nelson, thanks for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Neil.
Sophia Nelson, editor of PoliticalIntersectionBlog.com. You can find a link to her story at our website, npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. Up next, can politicians, in this particular Governor Sanford, survive a sex scandal? We'll talk about damage control and more of your calls. Are we sometimes too quick to judge? Why should private behavior threaten the career of a public official? 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford made his personal life very public yesterday afternoon. Following his confession of infidelity, his wife released a statement of her own. I remain willing to forgive Mark completely for his indiscretions and to welcome him back in time if he continues to work toward reconciliation with a true spirit of humility and repentance, she wrote. She also asked for privacy for her and her boys. In many ways, this is a private matter between a husband and wife at the same time. He's an elected official and subject to public scrutiny. So in the event of a crisis of Sanford-like proportions, what's a governor to do? Well, call Eric Dezenhall. He's the CEO of Dezenhall Resources, the author most recently of the book Damage Control, Why Everything You Know About Crisis Management is Wrong. And he joins us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you back on the program, Eric.
Thanks for having me.
And let's get back to the moment the governor was caught at the airport before the news conference. Well, an embarrassing moment right there at the get-go.
Well, you know, it's funny. A crisis, by its very nature, is mishandled. I mean, one of the things that happens when I get calls from media about these things is, oh, do you think this person mishandled it? Well, it's not like there is a manual that says how you can be a governor of a major state, have an affair in Argentina, and get away with it. And even though there is a tendency to look at these crises and picture these Machiavellian spin doctors in absolute control of things, the truth is when you're inside a crisis, you are on a tiny little boat in a very vicious ocean, and you're not in control. And the principal is often the last to realize the problem he has.
And again, not talking about the content of what the governor had to say at his news conference yesterday, just looking at the atmospherics of that news conference, it seemed like a disastrous mistake.
It was. You know, it's interesting. When you're dealing with ego-driven personalities, there's something inside of them that believes the answer to everything is more of moi, more me. And the truth is, in a situation like this, less is more. You get up, you say what you have to say. There's no question that he had a public obligation to address some of this, and then you get off stage. The media like to say things like, if you would only talk more, if you would only sit down with us, if you would only release your files, that would help you. No, no, no. That helps the media. That doesn't help the principal.
And try to keep it as dignified as possible. There were girls giggling in the background, people walking in front. Who was running this thing?
Well, you know, whenever you're dealing with a crisis, the truth is an organization in crisis, and you are dealing with an organization here, not just an individual, is just a collection of individuals looking for self-preservation in an environment where there is great pain, there are egos. And often what happens is you'll hear somebody say, what kind of advice is this guy getting? Well, you don't know that he's getting any advice at all. You might be locking himself in a room, and that's what often happens.
And as you look at this, by vanishing, by not knowing where he was, he became the object of ridicule. There were jokes about going camping out in the Appalachian Trail, and then the Argentina jokes, and once you become the object of jokes, you're in serious trouble.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think that it's much easier to defend a client who is hated than one that is ridiculed. I mean, if for example, your position is I'm pro-choice or pro-life, you can always say, that's my position and I have integrity and I'm sticking with that. And if you don't like it, well, that's tough. You can't get up there and say, I'm an adulterer who has a girlfriend, a hot number in Argentina, and I'm going to stand by that.
Yeah, and nobody can be in favor of adultery.
No, there is no real moral authority by defending that position.
And therefore, you have to make the best of what is inherently a bad situation. And thus far, Governor Sanford has not. Do you think he's on the slippery slope, or do you think he's going to be able to hang on?
Well, I look at these things clinically, not emotionally. And it's all about the variables. If it is found that there is a corruption angle here, that might be a real fatal problem. If it is primarily a personal issue, he will survive. I mean, remember, the Republicans tried to make the Clinton issue about lying and perjury. It didn't sell. And even though I heard the journalist, Ms. Newsom, earlier on, to sell the Argentinian affair as a corruption issue is not necessarily an easy sell if people like this guy, because it gets into the area that where we all ask ourselves, is this personal? Is this on the grid and familiar? Or is this off the grid? Is this corruption? If it's on the grid and it's a vanilla affair, I think he could survive it.
All right. He's term limited. He's not going to run for re-election again as governor of South Carolina. Presumably his presidential prospects are somewhat diminished. But
I think that they are. And I think, you know, damage control is all about picking the best of your bad options. His goal should be to repair his family and stay in office, not be president.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. Aaron joins us. Aaron calling from Sacramento.
Hey, Neil. How you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
Hey, I was just thinking, you know, it's really not about judging him for his personal life. It's not that he made kind of a one-night slip, oh, I made a mistake, or even a series of mistakes. But he willingly made a series of decisions that led him to abandon his state, his duties, and I think that really reflects on his ability to govern. I think it obviously shows where his priorities lie, and so I don't think it's really about judging him for his personal life and that should be kept separate, but he brought this into his public sphere. He made this show that he can't govern and that he has his priorities in completely the wrong order.
Yeah, he used the word himself yesterday, selfish.
Selfish, exactly.
And that's hard to overcome, Eric.
Well, it is and it isn't. I think that there's no question that whenever you have a situation where there's ridicule, where there's emails, which is a very big component to this, because I think that, you know, email has given us a cultural lobotomy. People have just lost all capacity for reason here. And the emails is something that keeps the half-life of this. It keeps it going. And I think that one of the things to keep in mind, though, is the difference. Why are we fascinated by this? And I think that the reason why is we all have a dark impulse, even if it's something as benign as eating too much chocolate. But all of us, most of us, a red light goes on our dashboard that says, watch out, be careful. When you're dealing with catastrophically successful people, they have been rewarded, not punished, by ignoring the red lights. And somebody like Clinton or Kennedy considered reckless, whereas most of us would get our rear ends handed to us on a plate if we ignored the red light. These are people who are rewarded for it. And a lot of times the public secretly likes a certain component of that.
Thanks very much for the call.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go next to this is John. John with us from Columbia, South Carolina.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
Big fan of the show. I am calling because I have been a big supporter of Mark Sanford for a while, and I was devastated when I heard his news conference yesterday. This is a man that I was planning on working on his campaign for 2012, and I was really hurt, but I'm prepared to forgive him, as I think a lot of South Carolinians are. Barring a corruption scandal with him using state money to go down to Argentina, I think that South Carolina will be able to forgive him and accept him to finish out his term as governor.
John, let me just add, and you would still work on a campaign for president in 2012?
I would. I believe in his principles, the way he stood up against the stimulus money. He's a brilliant man, and he's human. And I think we all saw that yesterday.
There is a character issue that some people would raise to say, first of all, to carry on an affair inherently implies a lying, deceit, betrayal. He admits himself that he betrayed the people of South Carolina. Is someone who's capable of doing that should be still in office as governor, much less president?
Well, I think that one of the things to keep in mind, and this might sound very cynical, but I mean it again clinically, is while Americans can forgive immorality, we have a harder time forgiving sloppiness or hypocrisy. And one of the things about, you know, for example, John Kennedy or Franklin Roosevelt is the fact that we never had official confirmation of what we suspected was very, very important. And when you do get a paper trail, Watergate tapes, a blue dress, basically forensic evidence that stays in the blogosphere bloodstream forever, it's a lot harder to get out of it. And there's a, you know, when people criticize somebody like Steve Jobs for being secretive, the fact is being secretive paid off. Barack Obama is very secretive. And I think it's paid off. So the whole idea that letting everything out there all the time for everyone to see helps someone is really the greatest PR myth ever.
John, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's an email. You mentioned hypocrisy. Jessica in Fort Mill, South Carolina. I think it should be noted that as a congressman, Mark Sanford voted in favor of 3 of 4 articles of impeachment against President Bill Clinton, citing the need for moral legitimacy. You can't have it both ways. He thought Bill Clinton should lose his job.
Jessica's right. And I think one of the problems that the Republicans have is one of moral authority. If you're going to campaign on moral issues, which is a perfectly legitimate position, you can't have this epidemic of Republican leaders having girlfriends in Argentina or Vegas.
And is this, speaking generally, not just about Governor Sanford, but is this more of a problem for Republicans who have many conservative Christians in their base of their party than it is for Democrats?
Hey, look, Bill Clinton, we all knew who he was. So when we found out who he was, again, there was no shock to the system because he was exactly who we thought he was. When you have someone who is campaigning, such as John Edwards did, I mean, a lot of John Edwards' moral authority was sort of the movie 16 Candles. He was the great-looking guy who chooses the plain girl. And people liked him for that. But when it turns out that that was all a lie, he has no moral authority left.
Let's get another caller on the line. Benjamin. Benjamin with us from San Francisco.
Yeah, greetings. The only conservative Republican from the city of 600,000. I think the Democrats love this because the Republicans were moving forward during this two-year tenure before the midterm elections. And this is another setback, of course. But I believe that
Senator Ensign didn't help either.
None of the recent Republican stories have helped. It's been fun to listen to the prurient stories, but we get a little wasted on it after a while. Where's Barney Frank when you need him? I think his political career is over, public political career. He'll have to go the route of Elliot Spitzer and head up a think tank or something. And if Mr. Sanford doesn't step down, then what it leads credence to is the adage of egotism that's attendant to political officers. So I think he will have to step down for the balance and also for the sake of the Republican Party as it continues to try and repair itself.
And Benjamin raises the issue of hubris, which I guess, Eric, you were talking about a moment ago.
Well, I think that's right. And remember, It is this egotism that often catapults people to where they are. And so and even though the caller was not doing this, to make a sweeping statement that the answer to this is humility really doesn't bear out. Whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, you don't get to the White House by having low self-esteem. And so I think
Or the State House, at that matter.
Or the State House. And so I think that, remember, it's not just when people say, oh, these guys all think they can get away with it. They don't think they could get away with these things. They often do for a long, long time, and they're rewarded for it.
We're talking about the aftermath of the announcement yesterday by Mark Sanford, the governor of South Carolina, that he'd had a year-long affair with a woman in Argentina. Our guest is Eric Desenhall, CEO of Desenhall Resources, a crisis management firm here in Washington, D.C. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Joe on the line. Joe with us from Minneapolis.
Yes, good afternoon. I wanted to say that the way I see this is that this is another example of a man in power pursuing a woman for his own sexual gratification at another woman's expense. I see this as sexism and patriarchy. The governor was unwilling to rise above the history of other men in his same situation and reject this kind of sexist behavior. And I think this is a bigger problem than him being a hypocritical Republican. I think it's a bigger problem than partisan politics. To me, as a woman and as a feminist, it's an issue of the misuse of power by a man with a woman as the victim, his wife. The Huffington Post blogger said that this has been done, this kind of behavior has been done through the ages, and therefore it's more understandable. I see it very differently. I think that the long history of men doing this should work against the governor. In other words, we should pose the question to him, aren't you more evolved than that by now? Aren't you going to be a mature, evolved man who uses his power to benefit the people of his state rather than using his power to do the sexist act of having adultery?
I hear what you're saying, Joe. I wonder, did you read the emails? And as embarrassing as they are, there's an aspect of real romance in there.
Sure, and I believe that. What I'm talking about is I think that we need to focus, because we're talking about the governor, we're not talking about the woman from Argentina who may very well have been in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the behavior of the governor. That's what we're talking about. That's why this is news. He's a public official paid by the people of his state to govern the state. He's a man in power. Why was the Bill Clinton affair such big news? Because it was the president of the United States. Monica Lewinsky, she was not the point. The point was it was the president of the United States who was a man, and that's the point here. So I think from a feminist perspective, we need to focus on the sexist behavior of the man in power in this situation, who was the governor.
Eric?
Well, you know, even though I've never thought of myself as a feminist, Neil, I happen to agree with most of what the caller said, in the sense that this whole concept of the woman just standing by and being supportive of a boys will be boys ethic is problematic. And I think one of the setbacks for feminism was during the Lewinsky scandal, when so many women were very supportive of Bill Clinton. And the message that sent is, if we like a guy, he can. If we don't like a guy, he can't. And so I think that one of the questions one of the issues I found interesting is that Sanford's wife was not standing next to him. Most of the women I know of my generation would not accept the old line notion that this is okay, boys will be boys. And I think you're going to see a very large cultural change in that regard. But feminists also have to make a decision with regard to, do you dislike anyone who commits adultery, or do you just dislike people whose party you don't like or who you don't find as attractive? Because Clinton certainly got a lot of support for feminists.
Joe, thanks very much for the call. One final question. We just have about a minute left. The phone rings. It's an aide to Governor Sanford, and he says, Eric, what do we do now?
Well, first you have to figure out the data. If, as a general rule of thumb, if you're guilty, repent. If you're innocent, attack. I mean, sometimes rumors are inaccurate. And when they are, they have to be knocked down forcefully. But basically what you have to do is you have to determine what it is you're trying to preserve. He's not going to preserve the presidency anytime soon. It is possible to preserve his family. It is possible to preserve the governorship. How you get there is by a less is more approach. You admit what you did, but you know when to get off stage, because there is no correlation between the quantity of an apology how many times you say it, how loud you say it, and whether or not it's resolved. There's a time to leave the stage.
Eric Dezenhall, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you, Neil.
Eric Dezenhall's most recent book, Damage Control, Why Everything You Know About Crisis Management Is Wrong, except that part that you know from listening to him here on Talk of the Nation. Coming up after a short break, the U.S. State Department says it plans to send an ambassador to Syria again for the first time in years. Advice from one ambassador to Syria to the next, Edward Derigian will join us. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.